A woman has been reported to the police and charged in connection with using abortion pills after she sought medical help. Buying and using abortion pills is illegal in the UK, and there is particular concern about their availability in Northern Ireland. Clearly, the question that we will be asking you today to respond to on the phones is whether a medical professional, whether you feel it's right that a medical professional should breach that duty of confidence, I guess, and report a matter to the police. The BBC's Ireland correspondent, Chris Buckler, with us this morning. Set this story out for us, Chris.
Yeah, basically, we have been looking into abortion pills for some time now, a matter of months. They are available online, and there's been concern about their availability. So we bought some abortion pills. We had them tested by the team at Queen's University's Asset Technology Centre, and they showed that there is a danger to women if they take these pills because they cause blood loss. And in some cases, a small percentage of cases, women will actually need a transfusion as a result of taking these pills. And as a result, they will need medical help. Now, during our investigation into the abortion pills, we discovered that there is a woman who has been charged, and she was charged after she went to get medical help. Now, you mentioned there about what is the duty of a doctor or a nurse or another member of medical staff in this position. Well, the Department of Health did actually try to clarify this earlier this year with brand new guidelines. Frankly, though, the guidelines are a little confusing. So they say that they have to give the police information likely to be of material assistance in securing the apprehension, prosecution or conviction of anybody who carries out an illegal termination like that. However, it then goes on to say that they have a reasonable, if they have a reasonable excuse for not doing so, they don't have to pass on that information. So it basically says you have a duty to, but you don't have to. So what's a reasonable excuse?
You have a duty to, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
And well, surely duty means a requirement.
Well, that's what I would have thought. And in fact, I was quizzing a GP about this morning. Now, they say that they don't really understand the guidelines too well. They describe them as woolly. Because one of the reasonable excuses mentioned in these specific guidelines is that it could be the discharge of the professional duties in relation to patient confidentiality. That may amount to basically not giving that information, basically patient confidentiality in simple terms. So you have, on one hand, the Department of Health telling medical staff they have a duty to report to police under the law, under the Abortion Act back in 1967. However, it also, on the other hand, says that they don't have to if it might breach confidence. And actually, it's the Criminal Law Act 1967, to be exact.
Right. So that then leaves the individual citizen trying to interpret that. So surely there is a need for clarity. If an individual citizen is going in to their medical professional, whatever that medical professional is, either during a test, be it a doctor, be it whatever it is, and we're distancing this from this particular case, I actually don't know the detail, the fine detail of it. We need to know as citizens whether if we are telling a medical professional that we've used these pills, whether that is going to be reported or whether the doctor can have a duty of confidence.
I think it goes beyond that. I think also...
But do we know the answer to that?
I also think medical professionals need to know the answer as well. I mean, I was talking, as I say, to a GP this morning, and we went round in circles basically saying that there is new guidance. This was new guidance issued this year to try and make this clear. But they are diametrically opposed, and it's in the same paragraph, it's in 6.1 of these guidelines, that you have on one hand the duty and then the other hand the excuse. So it leaves it completely confused. And as a result, there are some people who are saying to people who have taken abortion pills that if you go to see a medical professional, then you don't tell them that you've taken abortion pills. But of course, part of that might impact the treatment that they get.
Why did the Department of Health issue guidance earlier this year telling medical staff
to
that they had a legal responsibility to give police information?
Well, no, in that, this is the guidance I'm talking about. It does say in the same paragraph in that guidance that they have a duty to give police that information, but it then says that they don't have to if they have a reasonable excuse, which could be patient confidentiality.
So who's ultimately, Chris, the person to clarify this? Does this go up to Attorney General level? Mr. Larkin be issuing clarification on this?
Well, I think in the first instance, what you want to do is get some clarity from maybe the Justice Minister, maybe the Health Minister in these cases. Now, we have been spending some time trying to discuss this issue of abortion pills with both the Health Minister, Michelle O'Neill, and the Justice Minister, Claire Sugden. Now, in the case of the Health Minister, she turned down the interviews point blank. And as I say, we've been bidding over a matter of weeks, if not months, as regards to this. In fact, I got one line saying that the minister was not accountable. I replied saying...
Was not available.
Was not available at any stage. Not available. And I replied to that saying, what, at any stage? And they didn't reply to that at all. That was just a simple answer. In the case of the Justice Minister...
Well, that's good open government, isn't it?
Well, in the case of the Justice Minister, Claire Sugden, I did get a statement back which largely said prosecutions was a matter for the PPS and that abortion pills were illegal throughout the UK, and said actually the Department of Health has some of the responsibilities. But I did try to talk to Claire Sugden because she was available for interviews at a charity event which was organised by the NSPCC at the courts. So I went down there, I went in, I spoke to the NSPCC, made clear that I was going to ask her subsequent questions, which is always the way in news interviews. I went in and her press officer asked me what I would be asking her. I told him that I would be asking about this event that she was at, but I'd also be asking about abortion. He went to speak to her. He then came back and asked exactly what questions I'd be asking about abortion. He then went back to the minister and then came back to me. And we were standing in the next room to the minister at this stage. I was called into a smaller room and basically told that unless I was prepared not to ask any questions about abortion, then I wouldn't be allowed to interview her anymore. Now, that is against what I believe we as journalists should be doing. I don't think we can be told.
So they wanted to control the interview?
They wanted to stop us asking questions that they didn't want to answer. So I was told I was not allowed to ask any abortions.
Another example of good open government there.
I was told I was not allowed to ask any questions about abortion. Otherwise, the whole interview wasn't happening. Just that was as simple as that. They then called the NSPCC aside, had a talk to the NSPCC, whose press officer, I have to say, was lovely, and came back out and said, we have no problem with you being here. You're very welcome here. But it looks like this interview is not going to happen and that's not our responsibility. And at that stage, her press officer, in front of our television cameras, then started to have a go at me again, basically saying that I was potentially ruining this event for the NSPCC. I think we can hear some audio of that now.
This is the NSPCC invited you in here today.
Well, why is she not prepared to answer any questions about other things?
Because she's here primarily on a visit to the NSPCC.
So
simple as that.
Why is she not prepared to answer any questions about abortion?
I'm not answering any more questions, Brother Fulham. Please.
You're stopping me from asking questions of a minister. And at that point, he walked away. He then asked...
To be fair to him, she's there at an NSPCC event. They want to talk about their event.
And we said we would talk about their event.
Yeah, but that's what they want. They want the focus to be on their event. That's what the minister's doing.
Sorry, the NSPCC's event.
Yes, it wasn't the NSPCC's event.
Absolutely.
What you're really after is a story on abortion.
And we made that very clear. But the point is that the minister was unavailable for interviews. It wasn't the case that they're not prepared to discuss abortion. They said that they were basically not prepared to, that the minister was unavailable. She then became available for interviews at this event, so we went to discuss it. And it is completely standard journalistic practice to ask a subsequent question. That is the way a lot of events are carried out. And so...
That's right. So when we see prime ministers, for example,
visiting,
at business meetings, yeah, at factories and all of this, and they're giving their message on the economy or whatever, and then there are follow-up questions about that day's news or that week's news.
That's the way it works.
And what this press officer is trying to do is close that down.
Oh, beyond that, saying, I'm not prepared to even let you speak to the minister or see the minister. And in fact, at that stage, he asked another NSPCC representative to throw us out of the room.
To throw you out of the room?
Yeah. So basically, we're standing in the room beside the minister, and this is at the courts complex. So we were put outside into a corridor, a locked corridor, and the minister was then behind that locked door in another room. Now, we stayed in the corridor and asked the NSPCC if we could stay in the corridor, and then at some stage, she managed to make another way
right
out of the building.
Well, look, I'll say this, and you and I obviously are friends, many colleagues are, but for a government press officer to ask for an Ireland correspondent to be removed from a room, I haven't heard that happening too often before.
Well, subsequently, I should say that I have had calls from some other people involved in communications at Stormont. They told me that they were aware there was an issue, that they would try to fix it, and that they would contact the Department of Justice, who would contact me. I made a follow-up phone call.
So what is the Justice Minister's view on this?
Well, I don't know. That's
the
simple answer.
The public not got a right to know. It's our Justice Minister. What's her view on this?
Well, I don't know. And frankly, it's worth mentioning, okay, though, that the Health Minister also was in a position where she wasn't prepared to talk about abortion pills either.
Right, so we don't know what our Health Minister or our Justice Minister's views are on this.
No, and I mean,
let's bring in Breda Hughes from the Royal College of Midwives, Marion Woods from the pro-life group Life NI. Morning to you, Breda.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning, Marion.
Good morning, Stephen.
So, two ministers in government, we don't know their views on this. One isn't available. The other one, her press officer is protecting her from the question. My goodness, Breda, let's get your view on this.
Well, I think this issue is not going to go away. And I think our whole executive and assembly is going to have to get to grips with it. And I think everybody tends to lose sight of that. In the middle of all of this, there is a very distressed woman needing urgent medical attention. I'm glad the woman did go and get appropriate medical care. I think that's the most crucial thing. The Royal College of Midwives does not support in any way buying these pills online, but we understand why desperate women sometimes do desperate things. But then the healthcare professionals are caught on the horns of a dilemma, and this is a political issue that our leaders need to address. What Chris didn't say was that the Criminal Law Act of 1967, as well as imposing a requirement that if someone has information which is likely to assist in securing the apprehension, prosecution or conviction of somebody who's offended, that person themselves is subject to a potential prison sentence. And the length, if they don't give the information, and that prison sentence varies from 10 years if the offence has a life sentence attached to it. And as we know, abortion in Northern Ireland, illegal abortion, carries a life sentence. So if a healthcare professional sees a woman and isn't sure what to do because the guidance isn't very clear on it, and the woman says, I have taken these pills, you now have that information. And if you do not report within a reasonable time to a constable, that's what the law says, you yourself are liable to prosecution and you could be looking at a 10-year jail sentence. So healthcare professionals are in an impossible situation, and the women who are so much in need of help, some of them, if it all goes wrong when they take these pills, are also in an impossible situation.
Marion Woods.
Hi, Stephen. Well, I think in a way, Life Northern Ireland looks at this sort of differently, from a different angle. Rather than looking for a cure, we're looking really for the prevention. So what we're saying is, let's take a step back. Let's actually ask, why is it that women in Northern Ireland are feeling that their only option is to access these pills and to access them, yes, illegally? What we would be saying as a care charity is that we would be wanting women to take the time to think about what is the crisis that they're feeling, and bearing in mind that these pills can actually only be taken up to 9 weeks and 4 days gestation. A lot of women are only really finding out that they're pregnant at that stage, contemplating what that means for their lives, for their families' lives, depending on their situation. And so there's a lot of emotion and a lot of feeling there. So we're saying, let's take a step back. Let's get to the root cause of what the crisis might be. Let's address that before a woman feels that she has to access something illegally. Let's prevent it from happening rather than now saying, let's try and find a cure and let's just allow women to do this. How about we look and we try and help the woman before she feels that that's her only option?
I feel that's very laudable, Marion. The difficulty is that we know that the number of women from Northern Ireland travelling to Britain for abortions has gone down by about 200 a year over the last 3 or 4 years. And this has coincided exactly with the timescale within which pills have become available on the net. So I don't think that the number of women having abortions is going down. I just think that the number of women using illegal pills bought on the net and aborting at home is going up. And there are huge concerns among many healthcare professionals that sooner or later there's going to be a disaster if these women are afraid to go and get medical help. because they are afraid that they will be reported to the police. And we've seen this. This is now the third prosecution that we know of in Northern Ireland.
Well, if it's not legal, why shouldn't it be reported to the police?
Well, it absolutely has to be reported to police. I'm not disputing that.
Marion Woods? That's a question for Marion Woods.
Okay, well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, the law is there to protect felines. And this law also does protect women in the sense that we have laws every day that act as a deterrent. And these abortion pills, you know, we don't always know that where they come from. We don't always know that they're going to do what they say on the packet. And we do need to be careful, you know, as Chris said, you know, in terms of blood loss and physical things that may happen to the woman. We do have to be very, very careful there.
Do you know what strikes me also, and I think this programme can have a function here, you know, Chris has made it very clear that he doesn't know what our health minister's view is on this, and it's not about him knowing, it's about him trying to bring that information to you, all of you listening to this programme today. He doesn't know what our justice minister's position is on this. I think what we'll do, as a follow-up, we need to ask the PPS. We need to ask the prosecution service.
Well, I have spoken to the PPS.
What have they
said? The PPS left it to the police to discuss about these issues. They say they will not comment on ongoing or potential criminal investigations.
No, I'm not talking about the specific. I'm not talking about the specific case. I'm going to seek direction from the PPS and the... I think this programme needs to write to the Attorney General and ask the Attorney General, could he give, in terms of the public interest in Northern Ireland, could he give some guidance, as Chris, you were referring to health professionals
in
Northern Ireland?
Let's just pick up on that, though, because the guidance is a specific issue. So if you look at a statement the Department of Health gave me on this, OK, they basically say that, you know, care is their primary concern. But they also make clear that they did issue guidance and point out that their guidance on March 2016 is intended to provide clarity on the existing law relating to termination of pregnancy and to guide health professionals in its application in clinical practice. What might be interesting is to ask Breda. I mean, Breda, do you understand the law? Because the law does seem to say there's a duty, but that ultimately there's a reasonable excuse if you don't want to give that information. Do you understand what the duty is?
There is a duty to provide information, but it can be overridden in certain but very unclear and very unspecific circumstances. For example, if you are a psychiatrist and you work in the area of addictions and somebody comes and tells you that they are addicted to crack cocaine, you now have knowledge that this person is committing a crime. You then have to decide as an individual clinician whether it is in the best interest of the person or the best interest in society or whether it compromises your professional integrity for you to report that person to the law because now you know they have committed a crime.
So in terms of abortion, though, the point is, Breda, that there was these specific guidelines that were meant to clear up all this confusion specifically about abortion because it is such a sensitive and concerning issue. Do you know?
No, the guidelines have not clarified the position, but there is an easy answer to
this. Well, that's the point.
And the easy answer is, and this is the Royal College of Midwives' position, if you treat abortion as a healthcare issue rather than a criminal issue, then the situation doesn't arise. And if you were to decriminalise abortion, then there wouldn't be a situation where anybody would have to report anything to anybody because the woman would be treated as a woman with a healthcare need. We would also hope that it would get rid of this underground trafficking of pills, and you don't know what they are, on the net.
Stephen, sorry. I mean, just in terms of that, I think that is... Breda's let it out really interestingly. You know, there's a couple of things there. There seems to be a disproportionate amount of focus on these cases, and that is because there's an agenda for abortion liberalisation, as Breda has said, in terms of decriminalisation. And sometimes...
Sorry, Marion, I stop you there. No, I have not asked at any point in time for abortion liberalisation. I have asked that women are not criminalised, and that the staff who care for them also aren't criminalised.
Breda actually did get to speak for quite a long time there. I would just like to make a point here. So when we have laws in our country, they act to protect us all. And what I was actually saying was we need to address the root causes and to help the women at the centre of this. Now, if I can give an example, the answer is better care and services, not more abortions. If a desperate mother steals food to feed her children, she has been let down by society. because she has been put in a situation where she has no food to give her living children. Now, the answer is not to decriminalise theft. The answer is to address the causes of poverty with better services.
Are,
so criminalising theft doesn't mean that we're uncompassionate people.
We're going to have to leave it there. Marion, thank you. Peter, thank you. I think Chris, to be clear, one of the outcomes of your investigation, your report, is that as a society, we need more clarity around these guidelines. That's what we need.
Listen, everybody and the Department of Health and everybody all talks about the fact that these pills should not be bought over the internet. There is dangers. You don't know what you're buying. And everybody knows and accepts that there are dangers as far as that is concerned. The other thing, I think, though, is just to be aware that there does need to be more clarity in terms of what actually happens. I mean, as I say, there's some people who basically have said you can't give information to doctors. That obviously has particularly knock-on effects and a bit of worry in itself.
OK, Chris, thank you very much indeed. Just before the programme ends today, I want to come back to the issue I raised in the middle of the programme today about the DUP as a political party saying that they will support... and that they did support in Parliament the granting of a pardon to Alan Turing, and the DUP as a political party saying that they would examine any proposals to offer such pardons locally within Northern Ireland. John O'Doherty from the Rainbow Project joining us today. Alex Kane, the political commentator too. John, morning to you. Alex, morning to you.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, John.
We need to be quite concise and quick about this, just in the interest of time. This is, Alex Kane, we start with you, a political party, once associated with Save Ulster from Sodomy, now saying that they recognise the historical hurt that convictions impose on many gay and bisexual men, Alex.
Yes, I think it's a very important move. I was aware that the DUP in Parliament were backing this, and I think it's been backed across the United Kingdom. The only, in terms of context, it's important. It's a little step forward for them, but it does seem a little odd in the same week that we're getting the news that Arlene is saying that she will go out of her way to block for the next 5 years same-sex marriage. It does seem to be giving two messages, although I think the DUP will separate and say one is historical, recognising the work that people did under extraordinary circumstances who shouldn't be punished by history or circumstance, but saying that in terms of a modern Northern Ireland, they feel that they can stand on the same ground. The same-sex marriage is not the same as persecution, or what was perceived as persecution of gays 40, 50 years ago.
And someone, John O'Doherty, like Ian Paisley, one of the most prominent MPs the DUP have, supporting this, recognising the historical hurt that these convictions have had, supporting a campaign to examine any proposal to offer pardons locally?
Yes, Stephen, I think we should welcome any move by any political party or any individual towards supporting LGBT equality and addressing the inequalities experienced by LGBT people throughout our history. The reality is, before passing away, Ian Paisley apologised for his actions during the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Campaign. Here we have the DUP clarifying that criminalisation of gay and bisexual men was wrong. And I think in the future, because in the LGBT civil rights movement, there's a single direction of travel, I think the DUP will have to apologise and reflect back on a lot of the actions that they've taken, a lot of the positions that they've taken, and a lot of the opposition they've had to LGBT equality.
I'm really,
I think this is something that we'll continue to see.
I'm really sorry, guys, we've run out of time today. John, can I just ask you this very quickly? A point again I was raising. It's a separate matter than gay marriage. Do you know, John, honestly, if our First Minister in Northern Ireland, Arlene Foster, views your sexuality as vile, disgusting or unnatural? Because I'm raising those words because that's what members of her party in the past have said. Do you know what she thinks as a leader in this country?
I don't, Stephen, and I think Arlene should come out and clarify her position on that, in particular if she supports the position held by so many of her party colleagues in the past. I think that's something that she should do as a matter of urgency. There is a lot of homophobia being ramped up through the Ashers case, through issues around equal marriage over the last couple of days.
They would deny that.
I'm not saying it was built up by them. I'm saying there is homophobia, which is being ramped up right across Northern Ireland.
We're out of time. Have a good weekend, everybody. Thank you, John. Thank you, Alex.